Welcome, my dear friends, to Giant Conversations, episode number 30, and our 1 year anniversary. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, Ollie. 1 year. It's gone by so quickly. It doesn't feel like a year.
No, it doesn't feel like a year. No. I feel like we started yesterday. We're still total noobs. Have no clue what we're doing. We're just having a conversation. So that's right. Good.
Yeah. 30 episodes, though.
Not bad.
Pretty good. Yeah.
We should have prepared some stats. Did we prepare some stats? No, we didn't.
No. I mean, I looked at them earlier. I think we've got 60,000 followers or subscribers. We get about 450 listens every single time we air. You know, the standard stuff that I'm just making up.
Okay. No, but I mean, that's already something. I think we still need to like... End of next year term, we need to get to 1,000. But yeah, working on it.
I'd like to get to 1,000. That would be nice.
Yeah. But 450 is already like people listening. That's cool, and it's more than Giant Swarm size. So it's not only colleagues.
That's right, and parents and kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. So this time, what are we talking about? KubeCon.
We are going to be there. We're going to be there at booth N450, which always kills me because you have to put that on all your marketing stuff. It's like, hey, we'll be at KubeCon. Drop by booth N450. I mean, it's like there are obviously hundreds, if not even thousands, of booths at KubeCon every single year. They have 13,000 people attending, but their numbering system, I wish we were like booth 2, you
know? Yeah, it would be so much simpler. Can't we just work on just having booth number one?
We could always do like a guerrilla marketing thing and just make booth number one and see how long it lasts.
Or just booth number 42.
Yes. Yeah. And then we can have book signings. Yeah.
Book signings?
So we have, book signings, 42, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Obviously, that was the reference, right?
Oh, yeah. We get, like, the author over and, like, have book signings.
Totally. Booth number 42.
Our booth would be packed.
Oh, gosh, that would break KubeCon. Oh, that would be so cool.
Oh, I'm getting back to Carnival now. Do I need to, like, dress up like somebody from Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yeah, I mean, there's like 5 books, so you could definitely choose.
Yeah. It good one. Okay. Yeah, but let's get serious. So we're at KubeCon.
We're at KubeCon, April 1st through 4th of this year. We have some speakers.
Also meaning we're in London. Anybody in London listening? Oliver at giantswarm.io, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatnot. I think I even have Blue Sky. Hit us up. Hit me up.
Yeah.
Let's have a wonderful conversation about fun tech stuff.
Are you bringing your orange suit?
I should bring my orange suit, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I kind of thought it was a given.
Yeah, orange jacket and like green jacket and orange suit. Yeah, I need to bring the orange. Like probably just... The question would be how many people will talk about the talk that I did with Daniel Eichten from Adidas, because Daniel was just like hit up by some vendor about like, we just looked at the talk from KubeCon with you and the guy in the orange suit.
Oh my gosh. That was Copenhagen. That was
Copenhagen. Yeah, that's still looked at.
Yeah, I guess so. 2018, I think.
Yeah, long time ago.
Was a long time ago.
So, okay, but this time we have another talk at KubeCon.
We do.
So Marco is talking about how to gateway with Ingress, 140 days in-gate.
And then we have two talks at Rejects. And this one's cool. I'm with Marcus and Joe in our SIG talks. And Joe is doing essentially the keynote. He's talking about the cluster API migration retrospective. So his is a very high level, whereas Marcus's is actually a deep dive that everything you didn't know and needed to know about pods.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So we have both edges covered. That's cool. I think Joe will be nervous like hell.
Yes.
So please make lots of fun of Joe before he hits the stage so he gets more nervous. Sorry, Joe.
I've gone to tens and or hundreds of conferences, and Ollie, I know you have too, but you don't typically attend KubeCon. So what's the reasoning this time? Because I've heard there's like three different kinds of people who go. You've got like your big time learners, the ones who go to all of the breakout sessions. They take the notes. They come back with ideas. They write up essays. You know, they just go for it. Then you've got those who kind of hang around and network a bit, and then you've also got those who just party down all the way till daytime, and then they go to the conference kind of intoxicated. I'm guessing there's a fourth in case you don't fall into one of these buckets.
I'm told I should go again.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan of these huge conferences.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a total chance thing. But we have lots of people there that know a lot of people and so on and so forth. So I'll just hang around. I'm probably in the camp of going to the parties and coming to the conference drunk and staying drunk, because that's easier than getting sober and then getting drunk again. And in the end, deals are done at the dinner table.
Often.
So we have lots of things around there that we need to do. So I'm there to meet people,
mm-hmm.
because lots of people will be there. So I'll try to reach out to lots of people that I figure will be there, that I'm somehow connected to, and just have conversations and learn. For me, the talks are too technical to a large extent, and the talks I can look at afterwards. I don't need to go to a conference for the talks.
Mm-hmm.
If I find something interesting, then somebody from Giant Swarm will have seen it and post to Swarmalicious or whatnot,
exactly.
And say, like, look at that talk, and then I can look at it. But I mostly don't have the nerves to look at talks. I want to have conversations with people, because then I look at a talk and then I have 25 questions.
Right.
You know, so I want those questions answered, and I want to learn from people what their problems are, be it Kubernetes or how to fix my car. I don't care, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't choose the right wine. I don't know how to, I don't get my kid to ride a bicycle. I just want interesting conversations, and then we connect, and then we can go from there.
Yeah.
And I'll probably have to force myself to cut off certain conversations, just because sometimes you just have an interesting conversation, but we, like, the goal is to talk to a lot of people, hence you can't talk to the same person for 4 hours.
Right.
Americans, Israeli are way better at that than us Germans are. We are very, very, very social animals that like to have deeper conversations. So I need to watch out that I don't get caught up in too deep conversations. But I'm looking forward to those.
You need a couple catchphrases. There's, I think, one of my favorite ones, which I don't use all that often, but it's "Let me let you go." It gives them, I know you've heard it, but it gives the other person the idea that they are so important that they need to leave.
That's
because
they
have
one.
Something better to do. So, because it's often, it's good to, in the US, we like to kind of finish up with a little joke or a quip, you know, just like, oh, well, we're all getting older, ha, 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 all right, man, see you later, that kind of thing. I actually did that one today at the gym. But another one that is that you can kind of break in the middle is "Let me let you go."
Let me let you go is a nice one.
There is one. There's one that there's also got. If it's
now, I can't use it anymore though. Now everybody listen to the podcast. If I say "Let me let you go," they will all say, "Ah, you don't want to talk to me anymore." And Tommy explained to you how to do that, right?
I could give you another one that you could use instead. That's a little more standoffish, and it's "I got shit to do." It's like, all right, that's great. Well, I got shit to do. Everybody's like, oh, well, okay, you know. Oh, yeah, gosh, also, yeah.
I'm always looking at the watch, like it's 5 to 5:30 or something, and then I have another meeting. You know, but you need to wait for the 5:30 or like on the hour stuff.
Yeah, it can't be.
It doesn't. I have another meeting at 10:11.
Exactly.
No.
Well, I hope you have a good time. I guess you have, you've got your flights all
flights scheduled. All booked, flights all scheduled, fully prepared. We're on the boat directly in front of the conference. So we have a perfect sleeping spot.
Oh, cool.
So that will be good. Registered for 25 different parties. Nice. So it's going to be good.
Yeah, we've got a great crew going to be there. And we'll talk definitely as we're ramping up, because it is only, 3 weeks away. We'll be talking more and more about KubeCon. But let's move on. This is a big one. It's the evolution of IT operations and Ops Genie effective April 5th, 2027. I mean, this just came up last week. This looks like it's a pretty big deal for us, right?
Well, it's like, we're using Ops Genie and we need to use something else. But I have to say, like, when I read it first, like, Ops Genie is ending support, it's being turned off. I thought, oh, fuck, how much do we have in time? Like a month?
Right.
It's like 2027. Okay. We're fine. You know, we'll use something else. We're looking at, we're huge fans of Incident.io from the very beginning. We used Incident.io before they even like raised their first seed round, and like a really total beginning. So they have something now, and we're looking at different things to figure out like what is the right solution. But I'm banking on something like Incident.io. Otherwise, it's like PagerDuty is the other big fish in the pond. So we'll figure out a solution, but we have time. So sometime this year, we might move around.
I think that's one of the most reasonable amounts of time that any software has given to people saying that they're going to be sunsetting their product.
But that seems to be like Atlassian is an engineering shop. I think Atlassian is the ones that bought Ops Genie, and they're just, okay, let's take our time. Sure. I think it's really good. Like April 2027. Interesting that it's April 5th, probably just because they announced on April 5th. No, they didn't. I don't know why they chose April 5th.
That is random.
Maybe some huge account runs out. Maybe like Microsoft is using Ops Genie and it's running out on April 4th.
Right.
I don't
Could
know.
Could be.
Could be. Something like that. You know? So that's cool, but we're fine.
Okay. Yeah, so our team will slowly be migrating over to another software.
Yeah. And the other one that I see in the list, undocumented commands found in Bluetooth chips used by 1 billion devices. That's scary.
I know. I don't think people realize, I don't think regular people like myself realize how important Bluetooth is and how, I don't want to say easy, but how easy it is to hack or to use Bluetooth as your way in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and undocumented things is always not cool. I mean, we're just because you don't know what you don't know, and you'd like to have all the APIs fully documented and everything clear, and that's a harsh one, I agree. And we had a bit of a discussion with people because like lots of giant swarm people built their own IoT stacks for their home and stuff, and buy lots of stuff from Alibaba in the cheap and so on and so forth. So they are really paying attention to stuff like that. And it's in the ESP32 microcontroller. And it's in a lot of devices. So there now the question, what happens? Like, do those things need to be enabled? Or are they on by default? What happens if they're on by default? What can you do? So security issues include spoof of trusted devices. So you can make believe that you're the Bluetooth device. You can access data illegally, theoretically, through that. Like you can add additional devices to the network potentially, and really maintain access to these things. And that's just, I haven't dug deeper into the entire thing because I'm still a big fan of light switches and stuff.
Yeah.
And if somebody can turn my light on and off because I have a power plug that is like whatever Zigbee supported, then so be it. It's not connected to anything meaningful else. And I don't. Yeah, but there my naivete is probably in. Like it is connected to my phone. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it out there. There's I have printed on somebody else's printer. There was a guy, it was here. He was just across the way and he was blasting music, which I'm totally fine with. But then it started getting later and later and later, and then at some point it was like very late. And I went on to my phone and I found a speaker and I plugged into it and then I played my song real quick and then I turned it off because I freaked out because I could hear it. And then I was like, well, hell, I wonder what else he has that's not. And so then I found a printer and I was like, maybe it's his. And I asked him to kindly turn down his music and printed it out for him.
Did that work?
It worked. It worked. I think that the original me changing the music
Work
on,
better?
I think it scared the shit out of him. It would scare
Yeah.
me.
And I mean, if you changed, like somebody not knowing IT, if you
I mean,
changed the
really.
music and then print it on his printer, it's like, okay, what is he already in my apartment?
Yeah.
What else does he do? Is like a perfect. So
Yeah.
that's a good one. Congratulations, you did very well.
It's
I'm
a
very
lot of
proud of
fun.
you.
You can do that on the streets. I mean, you just walking down with Bluetooth open, you can look around. Anything that's open, you can pretty much stream to
I
it.
had that. I think my old Tesla, for those that don't know, Elon is a dickhead. I sold my Tesla because Elon is a
That's
dickhead.
right.
But I think it just drove past me recently because suddenly my music was off and I looked at my phone and it was connected to the Tesla.
You're kidding
So
me.
it must have been nearby,
Oh my
just connect and
gosh.
started playing music. And whoever was in the Tesla probably almost made an accident because suddenly some weird carnival song played on his car.
Whoa, so it really, that's
Well,
weird.
as soon as it's near, it will auto connect because I set
Sure.
it to do that. I didn't deregister it, obviously, because I'm stupid. And who cares? Why would I see the car again?
Yeah.
But it connected. It must have been near, or there was some other mistake.
I don't know. I mean, that seems pretty legit.
Yeah, exactly. So that was fun. And I was like, why is my music off? Oh, it's connected to
What?
the
To my old car.
what?
Well, that's wild.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't have only like Bluetooth chip problems and Ops Genie being shut down. Skype is being turned off.
This kills me. Honestly, this one really does affect me. I have a Microsoft 365 account with my family, of course, and I love it. It's inexpensive. It gives me what, a terabyte of storage in the cloud. I get credits every month for Skype, but really the Skype, I use it often. I have to make phone calls to the US to banks or
Okay,
to,
use it for phone calls. Okay.
yeah.
Because otherwise, like, I never used Skype for phone calls,
No.
but I didn't have these cross-country stuff so often.
Yeah, and I've got my own telephone number and all of that. And so it's when I call somebody who doesn't know me, or I can't call them via Signal or WhatsApp or FaceTime or any of those things, even Facebook, I have to use Skype. And so it's for me, it's a business thing, and I don't want to get Teams. I have Slack.
Yeah, and it doesn't allow you to call some a phone line, so
It
I think.
won't.
I don't think it does.
Yeah, there's going to be something else out there. I mean, I guess the competitors are what, like Zoom? I don't know.
Also doesn't allow you to do phone numbers.
Okay, so I
So I
looked it
think
up.
you just have to use something else.
I just have to use something else. I have to find something else, which I won't do until I really need it, when I need to call my tax guy in Pennsylvania and ask a question. And then I'll just do it then. And what I also have to do is I always have to do that at like 9 o'clock at night. I mean, because of the time difference.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. I am complaining about Skype shutting down though, because that's really soon. See, that's not long enough. April 5th, 2027 would have been nice for Microsoft shutting Skype down.
Yeah.
Then we could have actually connected the reasons why all
exactly.
this is happening.
Then it would be really Microsoft is using OpsGenie and their alerting system is running for Skype is running over OpsGenie and that's why they're turning it off.
There it is.
That would have been the point. So we have Kubernetes cost benchmarks. Interesting. And you compared.
Yes. Henning sent this through. I've actually got the from Cast AI. It's the Kubernetes cost benchmark report. And I've got the PDF linked into our show notes. Why don't you go over these findings? And I'd love for you to explain pros and cons of these, or is it good? Is it bad?
Well, it seems to be that only 10% of the provision CPUs are utilized. In our case, it's between 9.6 and 13.7. Max is 19.6. That is probably the clusters we optimize because we have with certain customers optimization goals. Because in the end, if you move from 10 to 20%, you can turn off half your cluster to a certain extent. Memory utilization averages 23%. On our end is between 20 and 40%. That's like we're slightly better there, but that was to be expected, and we can still get better, and we're still working with customers getting better. The real problem is that you need to work with engineering teams to an extent to figure out how to do that, because they will do their settings, and many of them are just afraid to not have enough resources, and hence they over-provision, and then you need to talk to them, and you need to have auto-scaling. For auto-scaling, it needs to be fast enough. Their systems need to work with auto-scaling, and so on and so on. So there's lots of little catches that are important, and that's why where we had real success, we had a very close relationship with the platform team, obviously, but also with engineering teams. And oftentimes what we did, we used GitOps to auto-add VPA, HPA, and so on and so forth for scaling to make that more efficient, to then be able to turn it down. Changing CPU data and memory data is a bit invasive, but that could be a thing to change that around. So there's still some work ongoing there. Same thing is, to a certain extent, is everything running in the cluster actually still running? We have a project with a customer there because they just like people deploy stuff, at least in staging and dev, and then it kind of didn't work and they forgot to delete it.
Sure.
Suddenly it's there using 0% CPU. That obviously changes the average.
Right.
You know? So you really have to watch out for. I think it's good to look at. It's good that we're better in some extent, but it also means there's still lots of stuff to work on. Because, I mean, the goal was always to fully max it out, but that doesn't work either because, like, you have averages and peaks, you have the weird Java problem that it always takes lots of memory, and then once it's running, it's, like, a lot less memory. So you need to account for that. We have lots of good experiences with doing optimization also around bin packing, meaning like you make sure that containers run on the right nodes to really pack these nodes more tightly. That helps a lot. Obviously means that the teams need to be aware of the fact that their cluster is a lot more moving stuff around, which their application needs to work with. And not everything that is in Kubernetes clusters is really cloud native. That's the biggest gripe probably. There's still lots and lots of lift and shift to a certain extent that goes into Kubernetes that to a certain extent maybe even shouldn't. You know?
So I guess in the variables, I mean, you only mentioned a couple of them. I'm guessing that there are so many that being able to utilize all the memory.
And you need to talk 40%. With the teams.
Yeah.
You know? And oftentimes they're just, oh, we have a big release. We need to go five times bigger. And they didn't even do load tests. You know, and they're way over provisioned. Look at Christmas. Like on Christmas time, you really have to pre-launch servers well before Black Friday and stuff. Because on Black Friday itself, Amazon is full.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow.
So you have to do that beforehand if you want to be sure to get them. For example, because data centers are limited sooner or later. Which brings us to how data centers can chase renewable energy across Europe.
Excellent segue.
Interesting one. Yeah, isn't it amazing?
So, and they pulled numbers from Ireland, which I think is smart because you've got like a microcosm of the entire, you know, globe because you have so many massive tech organizations in Ireland, and the electricity consumption was 21%. Of the grid in 23, and it's projected to reach 32%. This is way more than some of the other numbers from 2022. But this one is specific to Ireland. Mm. And you and Puyu went back and forth on this. And so what do you find interesting about this?
That I think we're not there yet. I get the idea. The question is, I think there's lots of things happening there, and at least they're trying. Like Microsoft just announced a dataless, a circular water data center. Lots of these data centers use a lot of water for cooling, and they have a circular system now in one of the newer data centers, meaning in the end they use a lot less water. Previously, just water came in, and then it was pumped out. I mean, that doesn't vaporize away and is never used again, but it still is a lot longer circle. This circular thing makes sense. I know that a lot of data centers are trying to be directly next to a dam, for example, stuff like that. From the crypto world, I know that there's lots of data centers that just take the rest of the power. Because one of the large problems is really like power flows, period. It just might not find usage at certain times of the day.
Sure.
And I remember ages ago, like in Cologne, like with very good weather, Cologne generates all the power it needs from solar and wind. But the coal factories can't be turned off because in the evening they will be needed and they take 12 hours to turn on. Hmm. So they will just pump power into the ground if need be, you know, different kind of solutions. And the idea of scheduling stuff that doesn't have a hard time dependency on data centers where there is just more power available and more resources could run makes total amount of sense. That would mean, though, that things could be scheduled efficiently in those right places and the data is there. And I think we're getting there. I would assume lots of like medical companies that's, for example, like if you talk to AWS people, the good thing is that they have medical companies doing calculations for finding medicine things, and they will take spot instances at only at the times where they're fully free and they have resources, and otherwise they just don't. So with that, you could spread it even further and really see, okay, I take it where stuff is going, and you could even possibly plug in to the power grid systems where they know where power will be generated in the next hour. You know, they know that the wind turbines are turning on here and there. They can turn it on and off and so on and so forth. In the end, the problem is that our grid changes from 25 power plants to 20,000 different things that produce power, including my home and the entire neighborhood and my battery pack. And I still remember in 2011, 12 something, the discussion was like generating power is easy. That's solved. You just need to build stuff. Distributing power is still the unknown frontier because that will be a lot harder with a distributed grid.
Oh, sure.
And there, for now, AI data centers use all the power they can get. The question is if they sooner or later become where the GPUs aren't the bottleneck anymore, but the power is the bottleneck, and they just launch them where they're needed, or where the power is cheaper. That's probably a direction this is going to.
Yeah.
And in the end, I think, yeah, it's It's 32% of the power generated. It also means, to a certain extent, it's a lot more efficient to keep a dam open and generate 100% output the entire time, keep wind turbines running, than turning them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Off and on and off and on again. So if you have a base load through data centers and can manage that and even can turn things off in the data center, that might become very, very efficient for the power grid, because you don't want the power grid to die.
Right. I didn't think about the grid itself. I always just think, because if you break it down, it seems like a pretty easy problem to fix. If you think about traffic, for example, just regular commuter traffic, you know that between 6:30 it starts ramping up in the morning, and then by 9:30 it's pretty much dying out. And then you've got lunch traffic, and then you've got the evening. It's the rush hour, essentially. And you can, on the weekends it's less, and on Sundays it's even less. And we've been making energy and distributing energy for a very, 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 very long time. And I feel like each area could just say, okay, well, this is always happening here. So we do, which I'm guessing they do. And then AI comes in. But now that you mentioned the grid itself, like you said, you can make energy all day long. That's not a problem through different sources, but being able to distribute it. And I guess between Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, you're going to have different grids. So
yeah, but for example, the grid providers can turn turbines on and off. They can turn the windmill off.
Mm-hmm.
They can make sure they turn on, and so on and so forth. And that's where the potential efficiency comes in. And an interesting conversation, just to wrap your head around it.
Yeah.
Energy flow and energy market are two different things. Energy will flow. If something starts breaking, the first thing they might turn off is the market in general. It'll just be free power because it'll flow. The thing that might break is who pays what, and so on and so forth, and mm-hmm. you'll just put it where it's used at the time, and some problems might occur, but you just don't bill anymore. You know, you just don't track anymore, for example. So there's lots of things that can happen, because, I mean, we just don't want to get to the point of a blackout, because restarting an entire power grid is amazingly hard.
Wow.
Because you need the right hertz number,
mm-hmm.
and getting that up, interesting. So yeah, we'll see. I talk to people. I read that, but this one is about talking to people.
Yeah, that's cool.
Talking to people running power grids. And that's just, I think it's an amazingly interesting market.
It is.
Especially in the future, especially with distributed power, especially with everybody having solar cells, everybody having batteries.
Yeah.
The question is how much stuff you produce, how much can you produce, and how much can you use? When do you do stuff? How many batteries do you have? How independent of the grid can you be? How do you put it back in? These new power contracts that you can have where you're paying whatever is currently on the market, and you can even get money for using power. I mean, you can get paid for using power because there's too much power in the market.
Sure.
Theoretically, you should just have your system say, okay, I'm now getting 6 cents, let's fill the battery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff will happen. I mean, we have that problem with, like, cars theoretically can plug into your home and deliver power to the home. In Germany, that's just not legal for tax reasons, because I could load up my car at the office and then power my home with the car. My car has a 100-kilowatt battery. That's 10 times more than I have at home. It could just give that power to my home, but that would be a Geldwerter Vorteil. You know, it would be a taxable occurrence.
Yeah.
You're getting quasi money from your company if you're charging at the company and releasing it at home. That's why that doesn't work yet. It's not a technical problem. You know, mind so blown. There's still fun stuff going on there.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like that's going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, no, it's still coming.
Yeah.
But okay, we still have another story.
We do.
The European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, okay, has introduced an artificial intelligence system, and that is a lot better and reduces energy consumption.
Yeah.
The AI thing reduces energy consumption from their old models? Wow, that's not something I would have expected.
It's an AIFS. It's the Artificial Intelligence Forecasting System. Marianne sent this through a couple of days ago.
I mean, it makes sense that AI is good at that based on the entire data that is there. I just wouldn't have expected to use less power than their old calculation tools, probably because it just crunches a lot of numbers that mm-hmm. aren't so relevant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
See, again, AI actually saving power.
Yeah.
Nobody would have expected that one. And I still think weather forecasts have gone way worse than they were way 10 years ago. It's probably wrong, but that's my gut feeling.
There are so many services out there. You know, we live by the weather in Florida. If it rain during the summertime, it rains at 5 o'clock and then it clears up around 5:30 or so. But the rain is torrential, and there's lots of lightning, and there's lots of golf, so that can be dangerous. There's beach, so there's hurricanes. Weather is very important to us, and I found a great weather app here in Germany. It's wetter.de. So it's I was going to say it in English, wetter. Yeah.
It's wetter.de.
It's really good. It gives an hourly, very accurate, because I think that the weather here is not all that difficult. Now, it comes from all different places, where in the U or in Florida, it either comes from the typically, it comes from the west, unless it's like a hurricane or some other kind of odd front comes from the east. But it's great. It's accurate down to I can even tell people, hey, it's going to rain in about 15 minutes. We might want to pack up. And people are like, oh, no, it's really nice right now. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going in. I'll see you guys wet in about 20 minutes. And it's pretty fun. So I even have a couple people who are like, just ask Tommy how the weather is. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, very good.
Well, that wraps it up. We, as I was saying, we're going to be talking a lot more KubeCon. Maybe we can find out from Joe and Simon and Heather what some of the nicer places in London to go.
Oh, we can do that again, yes.
Yeah. I figured that'd be a good idea.
That's a fun one. Mm-hmm. Where to go, especially from like the conference location where we're at, which is in out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So good idea. Let's do that in 2 weeks.
That sounds great. Ollie, thanks so much.
It's been a wonderful pleasure, monsieur. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.